Model effective listening techniques. Listening needs to take precedence over speaking. Listening is so vital to communication and interviewing that it gets its own discussion here. There are many levels of listening and only some of them are effective. Listen with the end in mind. When the counselor is a good listener, the client genuinely feels listened to and trusts the counselor more because of it. Active listening involves so much more than paying attention to someone talking. Active listening is defined as an engaged form of listening that involves paying close attention, interpreting verbal and nonverbal cues, and offering thoughtful responses. Active listening includes verbally demonstrating listening, knowing how and why poor listening occurs to avoid such pitfalls, and using attending behaviors that nonverbally demonstrate listening. These verbal and nonverbal methods of demonstrating listening are called engaging, which is defined as the act of building rapport and fostering a connection to create and maintain a relationship. Both verbal and nonverbal methods of demonstrating listening can use pacing techniques. Pacing is not mimicry, but just reading the room and adjusting the general tempo of an interview to the client's needs and current mood. The counselor can also alter the pacing, for example, to help keep the interview focused on the purpose of the interview or to reduce tension. Other ways of showing active listening include various methods of reflection of what the client has said. This includes clarifying information, summarizing what they heard, and affirming or validating acceptable client behaviors. In addition to using these interview techniques to demonstrate that one has heard what the client is saying and to verify that what they heard is what the client was actually trying to say, example, despite the various types of noise between the sender and receiver, they are also valuable tools for interview direction setting. The counselor can shape how conversations proceed by selecting what they choose to emphasize or ignore. This area also discusses some limitations of what counselors and clients hear when conversing in video, voice, or writing. Active and empathic listening. Active listening requires conscious and sustained effort to not only hear what is said but also what is meant and its implications to the client. It is only possible to actively listen when one is listening in silence. Try to spend about two-thirds of an interview listening. Active listening is a difficult task that must be learned. Counselors listen by focusing on what the other person is saying to the best of their ability, tuning out distractions, or the urge to think up a response. Counselors need to interpret a client's volume level, word emphasis, speaking pace, and pitch. They need to listen effectively even when clients have rambling speech patterns, speak quickly, use a dialect, or use unfamiliar jargon or cultural references. Active listening is a prerequisite for empathic listening, as is having empathy. Empathic listening is defined as the combination of paying close attention to a client's message while also working to understand the client's perspective to see with the client rather than feeling for the client. The goal is that the client feels seen and understood. Empathic listening, unsurprisingly, requires having empathy for a client. Empathy means the counselor works to understand the client's individual frame of reference while remaining an objective observer. The financial counselor imagines what it might be like for the client in their situation. When reflecting back to show empathic listening, the counselor clearly expresses how they would be thinking and feeling in that situation if they were that client. Empathy is not the same thing as sympathy. Sympathy is feeling for a client. Empathy is seeing with a client. Empathy is not taking on that person's pain, nor is it saying something counterproductive, such as, I know how you are feeling. Rather, it says, I am with you. Note that reflecting is defined as follows. An interviewing technique in which the counselor restates or paraphrases what the client said to guide the conversation, get clarification, or show empathy. Financial counselors can work to improve their empathy and empathic listening by seeking to understand another person's worldview, beliefs, and assumptions. It is especially important when working to show cultural responsiveness, verbally demonstrating listening. Verbally demonstrating listening can take the form of encouragers, various forms of reflection, affirmations, or some forms of silence. Verbally demonstrating listening can be a less is more situation. This is called minimal encouragement, and a term for these cues plus their nonverbal counterparts is encouragers, verbal and nonverbal cues used during conversations to show active listening and encourage continued sharing. A simple mum, I see, I understand, or then what, can encourage more speaking without feeling like an interruption. They also allow the counselor to stay noncommittal while internally making assessments. Reflecting is defined as an interviewing technique in which the counselor restates or paraphrases what the client said to guide the conversation, get clarification, or show empathy. The main purpose of reflection is to help a client tell their story. Another purpose is to guide the counselor and the client. Reflection guides the counselor by helping refine their current understanding of the client's worldview or opinion because it is a form of seeking directed feedback. The counselor uses reflection to guide the client by using selective emphasis. Selective emphasis is defined as an interviewing technique used as part of reflecting to highlight specific aspects of a client's story to help guide the discussion or help the client gain insight. It should not be used to express judgment. An example is to help clients see potential solutions to their issues. This selective emphasis should remain neutral rather than expressing approval or disapproval. For example, if a counselor emphasizes the client's preferred order, "So you plan on paying off the low-interest card first instead of the high-interest one," this emphasis might imply disapproval of that order. A neutral emphasis could be, "Your plan is to pay off the low-interest card first because it has the lowest balance, then to work on the higher-interest card." This version emphasizes the client's reasons. When reflecting, begin with the end in mind. Have a purpose for your follow-up that reflects the purpose of the interview. Reflection can reflect the content of what is said, the feelings behind what is said, or the meaning of what is said. Reflecting content can be used to get past the noise in the interview. Reflecting feelings works to reflect what the counselor thinks the client's feelings are rather than projecting the counselor's own feelings upon the client. The counselor may have made an incorrect assumption about a client's feelings, but will get feedback. Reflecting meaning expresses what the counselor believes is important to the client. It prompts further explanation. Reflection can also act as a means to help clients clarify their thoughts, feelings, and priorities for themselves. When a client expresses doubt, good reflection will reflect that doubt back rather than arguing it away. Client, I'm just not ready to commit to a budget. Counselor, I heard you say that you are not ready to commit to a budget yet. Did I get this right? Does this mean you would like to look at other options to address your financial goals? Compare this to an inappropriate reflection that argues away client doubt. You said you aren't ready to commit to a budget, but you don't have to commit to budgeting just to try a budgeting exercise. Reflection includes paraphrasing, summarizing, and clarifying. Paraphrasing, restating a client's message in the counselor's own words to confirm understanding and show active listening. Repeating the essential message of a client's message in the counselor's own words could be helpful if the new way of saying it helps provide clarity or a new way of looking at something. It is best when it is concise. Like summarizing, it does not add new content to the message that the client said. You feel uncomfortable about hitting your credit limit or getting more in debt due to unexpected or spontaneous expenses. Summarizing, a counseling skill that involves restating key points shared by the client to confirm understanding and allow for further reflection. Summarizing involves concisely rephrasing or paraphrasing the essence of what was said as a statement rather than a question. Summarizing can emphasize the important points of the narrative as a method of clarifying, helping the client organize their thoughts, expressing empathic listening, or affirming a client's progress in a given area. Summarizing is a good way to test out the degree of cultural awareness the counselor has developed with a client and to prompt the client to help the counselor understand that culture even better. It can also help with transitions, to end a discussion or to start a new session where the last one left off. For example, here is a summary for a client with credit card debt. We discussed that you are not getting ahead on your debt, your regular need to use your credit card, sometimes for emergencies and sometimes to go to the bar, and the pain of regularly hitting your credit limit. Clarifying, an interviewing technique in which the counselor asks questions or makes statements to help the counselor better understand the client's actual intent. Clarifying is a form of reflection that uses the client's own language to gather additional information. Used wisely, a clarification can assure the counselor and client they are on the same page about what is important to the client. Clarifying uses many techniques, for example, summarizing as a way of clarifying, adding an open-ended question, and the pain of regularly hitting your credit limit. Is there anything you want to add before we move on? Repetition, repeat a word or phrase verbatim. You are always behind the eight ball. Admitting confusion, I really don't know my pool terms. What did you mean? Affirmation is defined as a counseling technique in which the counselor uses focused you statements, example you chose to validate the client's specific traits, actions, experiences, or feelings in order to help the client feel more capable of accomplishing goals within their control and slash or reinforce behaviors that align positively with their financial goals. Affirmations are best when focused on specifics, are brief, and use you. They can be as simple as, I'm glad you decided to come back in again. Affirmation can be used while reflecting by using it to point out a client's good intentions, actions, or inner strengths. You said you would not even think about applying for another credit card, so you have more willpower than you are admitting. Affirmation can encourage positive change and help counselors retain clients because people tend to trust others who help them support a positive self-image. However, an affirmation needs to not be overstated or insincere. Affirmation differs from reassurance. Reassurance is defined as, in interviewing, this is a counterproductive communication method that involves indicating that a client will be okay or not to worry, which may be interpreted as condescending rather than comforting because it can minimize the client's concerns or dismiss their feelings or experiences. Effective counselors change it up. They avoid being mechanical. They don't overuse repetition and vary their reflection lead-ins. If I get you right, I hear you saying, etc. Silence can be a form of demonstrating listening. A deliberate long pause can be used to encourage a client to continue speaking on a subject, and a longer pause may be especially appropriate if the client has disclosed something difficult to speak about. Reasons for poor listening. A typical social conversation includes many poor listening behaviors. This can include changing subjects abruptly, often to talk about oneself. People may ask lots of questions or help fill an awkward silence. Much of what people say is irrelevant or their point seems to be obvious halfway through, and people interrupt frequently, being impatient to respond. People also listen defensively, meaning they are getting their argument ready as the other person is talking, and all the while they are pretending to listen or are half-listening. Also, things that threaten a person's worldview create an impulse to defend one's position. The fact that one can think much faster than people can speak adds to this problem. Sometimes people are just daydreaming as others are talking. Similarly, in an interview, some of the things a client says will be dull, off-subject, or unimportant. When counselors hear the words but ignore the message, this can lead to serious misunderstandings when a partial understanding is filled in with assumptions. Poor listening can take the form of physical distractions. Fatigue or physical discomfort can hinder listening. Being partly distracted by looking at a computer screen or notepad, even if it is to record information about the interview, means that the counselor can miss body language. Similarly, fidgeting and so on are forms of nonverbal poor listening. Understanding that these defensive mechanisms are natural can help financial counselors to be more ready to accept changes in their listening habits. Rather than believing that active listening involves just deciding to try harder to listen, effective counselors are more proactive. They make themselves ready to hear things that challenge their worldview. They educate themselves on the issues their clients are experiencing so they can tune in better since the subject is something they studied and is an interest. However, they also cultivate a beginner's mind or an assumption of ignorance so they don't think they know so much that they start filling in the blanks instead of listening. They also are gentle with themselves when they do fail. Failure once in a while is inevitable. After all, these are natural defense mechanisms. The key is to recognize when it occurs, determine the cause, and use it as a learning opportunity. Nonverbal communication elements. Nonverbal communication is defined as any aspect of communication that is not spoken, such as facial expressions, pacing, posture, or gestures. They can have a significant impact on the meaning of the message, especially its emotional content. Nonverbal communication conveys a person's feelings about what is being said. It clarifies a person's speaking intent. Nonverbal communication can make up more than half of a person's communication and is especially important for conveying feelings and attitudes. Nonverbal communication includes eye contact, facial expressions, gestures, and body posture. People also communicate whether or not they like it since others will assess a person based on their appearance and how they present themselves. People instinctively account for body language, but financial counselors can pay special attention to how they exhibit their body language and to the body language of the client. However, counselors should by default use body language that feels right and genuine, especially when working with clients with a similar cultural background or one that they know well. Forcing eye contact when it feels wrong to you or attempting other artificial or contrived changes to body language may come across as awkward and have the opposite of the intended effect. Here are some emotional states that nonverbal communication might be expressing. Note that some aspects of nonverbal communication, including eye contact, are culturally dependent and may not mean the same things universally. Financial counselors need to become familiar with the customs and norms of the individuals they are likely to serve so they can properly interpret nonverbal communication, which may not track to the patterns discussed next. Engaging or disengaging. Engaging can be shown using moderate but not excessive eye contact, especially when listening, leaning forward, and an animated face. Disengaging, or perhaps depression, can be seen by staring at a window or at the floor, slouching or leaning back, or facial expressions of boredom or disinterest. Comfort or anxiety, Normal amounts of eye contact can convey warmth and acceptance. Crossing of the arms can express discomfort with the subject. No eye contact or excessive hand gestures can express anxiety or fear. A face under tension may blush, perspire, or have pursed lips, calmness, or anger. Calmness can be expressed using a normal, relaxed speaking pace and tone. Anger can come out as clipped speech, elevated volume, and shorter than normal speeches and pauses. Embarrassment can also have similar patterns, but at lower volume. Credibility or insincerity. Delivering a message with eye contact increases credibility. Less than normal eye contact could signal deception or dishonesty, or other things such as shyness. Too much eye contact can make people uncomfortable. For this reason, a setup of a client and counselor at an angle to each other rather than directly facing one another allows for a little less eye contact. Over time, as a positive relationship develops, increasing amounts of eye contact are a signal that the relationship is improving. Nonverbal elements are most important at the start and end of an interview. The elements at the start of an interview set the tone. The nonverbal elements at the end, if they are in sync with each other, will signal the interview went well and that the relationship is strong or improved. Beware of making too many assumptions. It is hard to distinguish between anger and impatience or between hatred and envy, for example. Also, a person with their arms crossed may be cold rather than rejecting the subject being discussed. A wrinkled nose may signal disgust or a sneeze coming on. When in doubt, consider the verbal and other context and perhaps seek feedback. Silence is its own form of nonverbal communication. It can be used in many ways and its duration matters. Allowing for moments of silence can help the client or counselor collect their thoughts, make a transition between subjects less awkward, or be used as a prompt for the client to continue talking. Silence can feel affirming or tense. Sometimes things cannot be said aloud, but the silence allows for nonverbal communication to say it all. For example, a client expresses pain at the loss of a spouse. The counselor looks at the client with empathy rather than saying anything. The client accepts this and continues on their own when ready. Listening nonverbally, attending, and pacing. Listening nonverbally requires being a good observer. Notice facial expressions, gestures, posture, muscle tension, breathing patterns such as sighs, and outward expressions of emotion. Assess if the client's nonverbal messaging seems to confirm or refute what the client is saying. Nonverbally demonstrating listening can take the form of attending or pacing. Attending is defined as a type of focused listening that involves using verbal and nonverbal cues to indicate one is fully present and attentive when another person is speaking, especially in a counseling setting. Attending behaviors are the art of nonverbally demonstrating that the counselor is paying attention and is fully focused on the client. They are types of encouragers. These can include affirmations such as head nods, but don't overdo these, and using facial expressions that reflect what is being said, positive as a default, a concerned face for sad news, and so on. There are a number of ways to demonstrate attention. Attentive eyes. Make an appropriate amount of eye contact for the situation and overall. Be careful to avoid eye contact that could be misinterpreted as something inappropriate. Attentive orientation. The counselor orients themselves generally toward the client. If sitting at an angle to the client, this orientation can be more subtle. Attentive posture. The counselor can lean in slightly fairly often to show interest. Keep a good posture overall rather than slouching. Consider that crossing arms could convey being unreceptive, closed off. Crossing legs is also sometimes expressed as inappropriate, but this may be fine when the legs are not visible anyway or other methods such as leaning in are used to convey attention. Showing the bottom of one's feet is considered disrespectful in some cultures, so perhaps just cross ankles if a change of posture is needed. Attentive demeanor. A positive facial expression and occasional smile are important both when welcoming clients and throughout the interview as appropriate. At times, a serious tone may instead be the correct demeanor for the situation. Attentive ease. Keep from getting tense. Relax and be natural while being present. Don't overly worry about eye contact, posture, and so on. Just don't go so far in the opposite direction as to be inattentive, slouching, or otherwise disrespectful. Pacing is defined as a communication technique where a counselor intuitively matches a client's tone, speed, intensity, and body language. Pacing to match the verbal and nonverbal cues of the client is often an automatic response, not a conscious decision, and is more common when there is genuine interest in talking to the other person. Conscious attempts at pacing should be subtle, or it may seem awkward and could have the opposite of the desired effect. Pacing involves the counselor putting nuance into their tone, speed of speech, pitch, emphasis, and so on as part of conveying the intent of what is being said. A normal use of pacing is to match the client's tone with a compatible pace to create a rapport with the client. Pacing can also be used when reflecting a client's feelings. If the client is expressing shame or sadness, a softer pace is called for. When the client is expressing anger, more firmness may be needed or a break may be called for. A client's pacing can give a clue to their emotions. A client who normally speaks slowly but speeds up the pace could be showing nervousness, for example. Pacing can be used to help moderate a client's pace within reason. For example, a counselor could use pacing to slow down a fast talker a little. If needed, the counselor can also ask someone to slow down a little but take care. There should be a good reason for asking a client to modify their speaking patterns. Silence is important to pacing. If you have asked a client a question that requires some thought, it is important to give some time for that thought by silently awaiting a response. Speaking again will indicate impatience and lack of concern for the answer. Getting used to silence can take some experience to avoid feeling stress when allowing it. Communicating in video, voice, or writing. Interactions using technology can limit the amount of body language and other nonverbal interactions that clients and counselors receive. Communications in text, email, and so on are even more limited in this regard, and counselors should avoid some things such as humor in these media, as it is easily misinterpreted without the social cues. Extra effort is needed to convey nuance and feelings. Furthermore, email communications are asynchronous, no immediate responses, which increases communication challenges relative to texting, which can feel a little more personal if the counseling practice allows texting clients at all. If allowed, texting could be used just for scheduling and the like or be used for more if it is a client preference, as may be the case with many younger clients. Counselors and clients might use things such as emojis or type out emotional responses such as sigh to help convey intent. A general rule of thumb for texting, if you would not be comfortable having your text read out loud in a courtroom, don't type it. It is a written document. Online communications with a counselor can sometimes create an effect where some people feel more comfortable disclosing highly personal issues in this format than doing so in person. There can be less fear of embarrassment for some people in this format. Communications using technology is a gray area in the AFCPE Code of Ethics, but some standards of practice relate to technology. Standard of Practice 13, Confidentiality of Records. Counselors must maintain appropriate confidentiality in creating, storing, accessing, transferring, and disposing of counseling records. This standard extends not only to online communication but also to any software systems counselors use for storing and organizing counseling records. Online clients still need to sign consent forms, and additional ones for social media policies may be needed. Do not friend clients on social media and keep any text short and document them. Verify that online communications are properly encrypted and do not record unless you already have written consent and have a valid reason to do so. Standard of Practice 14, Permission to Record or Observe. Counselors must obtain prior written consent from clients in order to record electronically or observe sessions.